But I'd like to hear some feedback from you if you've got that, if you take time to do that. It would help me work on that a little bit and kind of see what everybody got from the class this quarter. Lesson 19, we've got 20, 21, 22, and then that one review, so we'll wind another quarter down here. Okay, here's where we are. Look at this chart up here. Of course, oops, back up. And they hit the wrong button. In the north, we've had Ahab, wicked, his son Ahaziah, Jehoram, his other son. And now Jehu's come in with this vicious zeal and clean things up. And down the south, we've had Asa, a good king, Jehoshaphat, and then Jehoram, of course, tied in with up here, and his son Ahaziah. And now we got Athaliah fixing to come in here. So right now, Jehu and Ahaziah. Call your attention to this chart across the bottom. It's got the dates on it. If you can read them up there, if you can or not, but that 850 here down to 650, but we're in the 840 or so BC, 840 years before Christ, roughly time frame. And here's the point I want to get to is we're just over 100 years till the kingdom of Israel will be gone. Gone. Okay. Just over 100 years. So, and we'll talk about that time frame a little bit this morning when we get to talk about we're going to talk about this Syrian Empire, this nation here is going to come in. We'll talk about them some this morning as we get into the class. All right, there's a little chart we've been using. Of course, Jehu is now king in Israel. And Ahaziah has just been killed by Jehu, so that means Athaliah is coming in, taking over now in the south. Let's kind of get a review from last time. Jehu was killed. Jehoram in the from the north, and Ahaziah from the south, and they're supposed to wipe out the entire family of Ahab. So he's told the people in Samaria that if there's 70 sons that you've got there of Ahab that you're keeping and training and bringing up, said, I want their heads. So they do that. They cut the heads off and bring them and put them in two piles of heaps near Jezreel. We can't imagine something like this going on. And he's wiped out the house that they have in the process. And this is, I think, the third time we've seen a dynasty end, totally end in the north, because of their disobedience there. We introduced this gentleman named Jehonadab that was with, Jehu part of the time. We know nothing else about him except over in Jeremiah 35. His family is referred to in a comparison between the way they did obey what their fathers wanted them to do versus Israel and their disobedience to what God wanted them to do. Athaliah, this daughter of Ahab and Jezebel that married the king from Judah, when she hears her son's been killed, of course her husband was on the throne and her son was on the throne, and now they're all wiped out, so she decides to take over. So she kills all of her living grandchildren, wipes out where nobody can be on the throne except her, and she proclaims herself as being the ruler in Judah. So now we have Jezebel over there. Yes, sir. Yep. Good old Joash is still sitting there. We can get to him. You're right. So even though Athaliah proclaimed herself a ruler, there's that little thread we've talked about of God's promise to David is still sitting there, and we'll touch on that some more later several times in the class. As a matter of fact, this morning, Brady's absolutely right. Athaliah does not conquer what she thinks she's conquered. But what we have now is this daughter of a wicked Ahab and Jezebel that's not reigning in Israel where you expect them to. She's reigning over in Judah, of all things. And we mentioned here in 2 Samuel 7, that very reference Freddie's talking about there. Because Ahaziah's sister, Jehosheba, the wife of the priest, Jehoiada, and she's taking this infant son of Ahaziah that Athaliah thought she killed, and she didn't. And she's hid him away, and she hides him away for 7 years until he is put on the throne there. So we'll get to him a little bit later in the class this morning, as a matter of fact. Now, back in Israel, Jehu's the king now. He gets all the Baal worshipers to come together for this great big feast where he's going to have this big sacrifice and things to honor Baal. He's doing it deceitfully. It's not there's intent, but it's what it looks like. So he brings all the Baal worshipers together, puts them in the temple, says, don't want any worshipers of Jehovah here. So he's strictly got Baal people there. And then with the temple filled with all of them, he has 80 soldiers stationed outside, and at the signal time comes in, he sends them in, and they wipe out all the Baal worshipers. So he is taking care of that now in Israel. Not in Judah, but in Israel. There. It's a little statue, a little image of a Baal that was uncovered through the archaeology several years ago. This is just a small version of it that might be in a household or something like that. So what's Jehu done? Well, Jehu has wiped out all the house of Ahab, like God told him to. That's very specific instructions from the prophet, which would go wipe them out. He's wiped out Baal worship, which would be a very, very good thing to do. Things looking pretty good in Israel right now. Better than it has in a long time, seems like. And Jehovah even tells, Jehu that your sons will be on the throne for the four generations. Because things aren't going so well. But we pointed out last time, Jehu didn't go all the way. He did not wipe out the golden calf worship that Jeroboam had set back up at the very beginning. So they're still worshiping the golden calves, not going back to Jerusalem, the temple, and worshiping as they should. And I talked a lot last Wednesday night about Jehu and his zeal. Where he said, come up to my chariot and see my zeal for the Lord. And Jeff made a point to me after class that's very valid. The inspired writer does not mention Jehu's zeal. Jehu said, come up and see my zeal. Okay. I base my comments mainly on this. Because he did do what God told him to wipe out the house they have. And he did wipe out the Baal worship, which was good. So he was showing zeal, but we made a point very clearly that it was very misguided zeal. It was zeal as long as he was doing what he wanted to do for God. When it came down to really serving God and totally serving God, his zeal failed. Okay, so that point about that. I appreciate Jeff's comment about that. All right, this morning's class. We're talking about a little bit about the Assyrian Empire, but they're going to come into play. Like I said, really about 100 years before you really see a lot of them, but they're in existence even now. So we'll talk about them and then some of the other stuff. This map, this orange up here, shows the territory of the Assyrian Empire when it's maxed out later on in time. All the way down in Egypt, controlled down here over to the Persian Gulf, Turkey, over in what's Asia Minor it was then, this whole territory here, including, of course, our territory in here. And what I want to look at is the time frame. The Syrians were about from 900 B.C. Now, we're talking about we're in 840. So they're already in existence now. The Syrian Empire is not to this maxed out territory, but they're in existence. They go from about 900 to 600 B.C. So they're getting cranked up over there. Here's a map that's a little clearer to see. This dark color here would be the Syrian Empire. And over here, where the land of Canaan would be, we see Judah on this map is still separate, but this one's gone. They've already been conquered. They're not even on the map anymore. Nineveh, the capital up here on the Tigris River, about 600 miles across there from Nineveh to Jerusalem. Now, you would go further going there because you would come up around, but not across the desert here, but about 600 miles distance across there on the map. So, Syrian Empire, Nineveh's the capital, over on the Tigris River, over there, with what's now northern Iraq. Large territory. When they were to max, they were a big world power, that known world at that time there. Illiterate people, as you might expect from that time frame, and war's their thing. They're a massive war machine. And they come in and push their gods, their religion, on the people that they conquer. Couple of things that they did to make them a major war machine for that time. They gave their soldiers weapons made out of iron, which had been unusual, and they were masters at the horse-drawn chariot. And you imagine those two things coming against you in a battle, and you didn't have those kind of things, what kind of disadvantage you would be at. So that's why they had this major war machine. They were great. They were very organized militarily. Hundreds of thousands of people in the army. A major, major fighting machine here, like had been, not been seen before. And they would come at you because of this, what they had the ability to do with this psychological approach here. They would send their ambassadors in there. They call them the cupbearers here, would come in and say, surrender. We're going to come wipe you out. If you don't, just surrender up front. Just get it done. If you fail to do that, then they would come in and they would put a siege around the city. And they would shout at you and taunt you and entice you to surrender to them without the battle. And if you still fail that, then they would bring in their war machines and forced to fight, you were in trouble. They had giant wheeled siege towers. I tried to look to find some pictures of that. And here's what someone might look like from this concept here. But they would bring in these big wheeled towers and could climb up the walls and breach the walls of any city. And they also had these battering rams they were noted for. They would come in and bust down the walls and the gates, things with those. So they were just a very vicious fighting machine. Here's a quote that was found on an inscription from one of their kings. He says, I am powerful. I am omnipotent. I'm a hero. I'm gigantic. I'm colossal. That's the way he looked at himself. The word that jumped out to me here is this one. Where do we use that word normally? To describe Jehovah God. Okay. To describe Jehovah. As omnipotent, all powerful. This Assyrian king, that's how he considered himself. I am all powerful. But not only did they do this great war stuff, they were also had a major impact on that time from other areas. Great advances in science, technology, other things with a civic list here in a minute. They spread their civilization around. They had a lot to offer the then known world from that standpoint, from civilization, not just from their war territory, their war tactics and things they did. They didn't go in to conquer and destroy people. They went in to conquer and civilize or turn you into what we are type. Approach people there. And because of this, there was a culture spread across the entire known world at the time. Because of that, perhaps one of their biggest achievements was that. And there's some other things that they were noted for, things that we wouldn't think about, but doing the research, they brought out some of these things, postal system, magnifying glass, plumbing, things like that. So then in addition to being known for their barbaric warfare, they actually contributed positively to the times. Let's go back in time just a little bit here. Well, of course, I know we're down here now in Jehu, but go back to this 870, 850 time frame of Ahab for just 1 minute here. Just back up about, 30 years or so like that. And just note here, this is some information about the Assyrians and Ahab. 853. We're talking about being in the 840 time frame now. But Jehu, back up a few years. And there's this inscription found that a coalition of Egypt, Hamath, and Abar, and we'll look at those two cities here in a minute, the Ammonites and Ahab of Israel, along with Syria, went together to band together to fight against the Assyrians and to try to defeat them. They did that time. They came back in 849, 846. So the Assyrians would just keep bombarding the territories there, trying to take them. So that's Ahab, and there's another one found then that references Jehu. We'll see this more in a minute. But Jehu bows down before Shalmaneser III, who was one of the kings of the Assyrian Empire, when he came in and fought against him. And there's this monument that actually represents that. This thing here is about 7 feet tall. 18 inches wide. It's got inscription bands around it. You can't see it on this, and I'll show you another picture in a minute. Bands of it's got wording under it and pictures carved in this thing around it. And the what it's saying here is the image here. See the bowing down here before the kings. The inscriptions in here, but that's referencing Jehu. Jehu of Israel bowing down to Shalmaneser III, the king of Syria. So documented in this archaeological discoveries here for that. Just use this for a reference for a minute. Of course, we're familiar then with Judah down here, Israel up here. And then Damascus, the capital of Syria. You can already see what Syria is doing. We'll talk about that in a minute too with their territory. But Damascus up here to the very, very top, the capital of Syria. Well, let's go up. Here's Damascus now down here. Go up above that. So Nineveh's over here. So if they came up around to come down and do this attack down here, they would come through. And these two, we mentioned earlier, would be in their way. So they got involved in this battle too, way up north of Damascus up here. Look at that. So recapping a little of that, days of Ahab, they tried to come in and invade. excuse me, 853. Turned away this coalition of all these kings that came together to fight against Assyria, Ahab being one of them. They came back then when Jehu was on the throne, about the time he did there, and attack Hazael this time in Syria, trying to conquer him. He turned them away this time. They kept coming back. And then Jehu on this monument, it's called an oblige. Came back and looked at him, and the description there is tribute by Jehu. He's not really literally a son of Omri, but in the descendants of the king, looking at it from outside, he would that be the Shalabeth, or that's that. So now, Hazael, the king of Syria, has successfully turned away the Assyrian impact, so he's now turning and trying, he's attacking Israel. So, there's a reference here in 2 Kings chapter 10 that in those days, the Lord, and notice who's doing this, the Lord began to cut off parts of Israel. So Israel has turned their back on God, and he's beginning to let them be conquered. These other nations, particularly Syria, come in and fight against them. It says Hazael conquered territory, all the territory on the eastern side of Jordan, and we see some conquering on the western side as well. But keep in mind, this is the Lord's doing this because of the way, of course, nation of Israel has acted. And remember when Elisha went to anoint Hazael to be king? The question was, will Ben-Hadad get well or not? And the answer was, yes, he will, but he'll die the next day. He'll die. Hazael killed him. Remember what Elisha did? He looked at him very intently and started weeping. We talked about that a week or two ago. He said, why are you weeping? He says, because you're going to be king and all these things you're going to do to Israel that the Lord has showed me. You cut open their pregnant women and you bash their young men. Well, that's happening now. Hazael has come in this very passage here in 2 Kings 10. That's what he's doing. He's coming in and conquering the territory of Israel. Just like Elisha said he was going to. So here's Israel. Down here. And this is the territory, and this is just a map, kind of dates just a few years past where we are now, but not much, very close. And look here. What's this? Here's Mount Carmel. This is that Jezreel Valley we talked about several times. It's gone. It's not even colored like Israel's now. It all belongs to the yellow. That's Syria over here. So Israel as a nation, territory-wise, is sinking down. Smaller and smaller. God's cutting them off. They've cut off God. He's cutting them off, literally. Okay. So the narrative now. Jehu reigns 28 years. He's the king in Israel. And he's buried there in Samaria. Jehoahaz is his son. That's another name we can add to our list now. Jehoahaz is the son of Jehu. Got a new dynasty. Jehu is the first king. Jehoahaz is the second. We're going to get four generations of four generations of Jehu's sons. Jehoahaz being the first one. The only king on the throne here. Now, go back to what Freddie's talking about over here. Athaliah. What's going on with Joash and Athaliah? Well, Athaliah has the daughter of Ahab Jezebel, and she is the one that's come in and killed her grandsons after Ahaziah reigned just 1 year, and she came in and killed all the heirs except Joash. Joash was an infant and was hid in the house of the Lord. That phrase is used over and over and over through these chapters here, the house of the Lord. It was hid there and was not killed. It was 6 years old when it was hid. The house of the Lord. Oh, why would Athaliah be in there, right? No, she'd be in the house of Baal over here, the temple of Baal. We'll see that destroyed in this very chapter here. Yeah. A safe place in it because she's not going to come there, that's for sure. That's just come to steal some gold image or gold things out of there or something. So Joash is hidden there in the house of the Lord. And now it's time. Time has passed. And so Jehoiada decides it's time to make him king. Athaliah's been reigning here about 7 to 8 years. I think it's an infant, and now he's 7 years old, if I remember right. And so Jehoiada the priest talks to the captains of the guards. These would be the Levites. They guard the temple, guard the king, and guard the possessions around the temple and things like that. It's on a Sabbath. There's a shift change coming in. They come in and work for a week at a time. And it's time for this change. So he works up the plan that when one group of guards is going off duty, the other group's coming on duty where you got a double force there. Extra people on duty. That shift change, if you will. That's when they're going to bring out Joash and present him as being king. Well, he's got extra help there, if you will. So he gets the guards together and he's going to take, he puts a third of them in one place, a third in another place, a third in another place. He spreads them out to guard the king, to guard at the gate and whatever. Everything lined up. The captains are all on board with this thing. So they go out with their people. So they surround the king every side, and Jehoiada tells them, if anybody approaches, kill them. If anybody comes too close to the king now is 7 years old. Keep it in mind. Okay. I'm not talking about a king. I'm talking about a 7-year-old king. If anybody approaches, gets too close to him, kill them. So, everyone's in their place. Jehoiada's given them the weapons that are out of the temple. They have some things to use, shields, spears, to guard the king with, make this transition occur. So Joash, 7-year-old, is brought out and crowned as to be the king in Judah. Now, what's significant about that? We'll put more just in a minute. But who have you got back on the throne now? Descendant of David, back on the throne. It's this 7 or 8 year period in here where Athaliah is ruling in Israel and in Judah. I mean, there's no king of David there. That's been fixed now. So he's given a copy of the law, the testimony, and people shout out, "Long live the king! Long live the king!" And he does. He reigns until he's 47 years old. 40-year reign. Now, we're going to get through really early today, I'm sorry. Athaliah. Okay. What's going on with her? She's there in Jerusalem. She's ruling. And she hears all this commotion. All this noise going on. Blowing the trumpets. Shouting. Long live the king. And so she comes out and says, what's going on? And obviously she see what's going on. So her, it's what? It's treason. I'm the ruler, and now you come in and crown this guy to be king. So Jehoiada takes her and says, kill her. Kill her. The priest requests that they don't kill her in the house of the Lord. Take her out. They take her out to the horse gate. Take her out there, and they kill Athaliah and end that. And then they go in and tell them she wouldn't be in the temple a while ago. They go into the temple of Baal that she has put up there in Jerusalem. Now, what's already happened to the temple of Baal up in Israel? Jehu's taking care of it. They turn into a latrine. And now they go in and take the temple of Baal that she has erected in Jerusalem, and they just destroy it. So now, over here we got Joash back on the throne in Judah. So here's our kings, Rehoboam, Abijah, Asa, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, Ahaziah, Athaliah sticks in here for a while. Now Joash is back on the throne here. Oh, she didn't know he existed. Surprise, surprise, right? Yeah. To put anybody on the throne, Athaliah thought she'd killed all the grandkids. I mean, where'd this guy come from, type thing? Well, we know where he came from. Okay. And we'll get to it right here, a couple of verses. 1 Chronicles 22:10. This is David talking to Solomon. And it's kind of a parallel to what goes in 2 Samuel chapter 7. David talking to Solomon and telling him what the Lord has told him is going to happen. David says, he shall build a house for my name. He, being Solomon, will build a house for Jehovah. He shall be my son, I'll be his father, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom over Israel forever. Now, don't let Israel throw you off there. It's not talking about the northern kingdom. It's talking about Israel, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. It's talking about the nation of Israel over Israel forever. So, again, look at that parallel to what's in 2 Samuel chapter 7. How long is it going to last? It'll last forever. Again, that's a dual meaning. It doesn't mean that the physical throne is going to be there forever, like in eternity, but it does mean the spiritual side will be there forever. And then look at Psalms 29. We got this minute. Psalms 29 for just a minute. Excuse me, 89. Psalms 89. This is a psalm written by Ethan. And we're at about verse, I think it's 22 where I want to start. Let's see if it is. It's verse 19. Again. I've got a note scribbled in my Bible note right here about 2 Samuel 7. It ties back into this same thing. Verse 19. You spoke in a vision to your Holy One and said, I have given help to one who is mighty. I have exalted one chosen from the people. I have found my servant David, my holy oil. I have anointed him with whom my hands shall be established. Also my arms shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not outwit him. The son of wickedness, nor the son of wickedness afflict him. I will beat down his foes before his face and plague those who hate him. That's all we're talking about David, what God's going to do for him. But my faithfulness and my mercy shall be with him. And in my name, his horn shall be exalted. Horn is his generations after that. I will set his hand over the sea, his right hand over the rivers. He shall cry to me. You are my father, my God, the rock of my salvation. Also, I will make him my firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. My mercy I will keep for him forever. My covenant shall stand firm with him. His seed also I will make to endure forever, and his throne shall be as the days of heaven. His son forsake my laws, and he goes on through it from there. But again, it's parallel to what we had in 2 Samuel 7, 1 Chronicles 10 a while ago, and now this. How long is David's seed going to be on the throne? Forever. Okay? And in the spiritual sense, that is forever through Christ. Okay? So, back to the very point Freddie made while I go to start with. Come down and we'll kind of wrap the thing up. I'm a bit early. Athaliah and all the other agents of Satan could never and can never prevent the completion of God's plan, this divine purpose. Just keep that in mind. Satan's not going to stop God. Now we're thinking about here 840 years before Christ. Okay. Athaliah tried to wipe it out. She tried to stop it. What did Satan try to do when he had Christ killed? Through the Jews. Through the Romans. What did he try to do? Tried to win. Who won? God won. God will always win. Okay. Now, what I was thinking about, just for 1 minute, is this whole thread that's coming through here. What has been promised? What's been promised all along? Who is coming? The Messiah is coming. Christ is coming. Christ is coming. And this is that thread that's coming through. It's been promised. Down to one little beep, one little infant baby here at one point. But that's a lie didn't win. That's a lie's not going to win. Satan's not going to win. Christ rose triumphant over that. God won. God will win. And here's the point for us. How thankful we are. How thankful we are that this plan of redemption that God says all the way back in Genesis 3 when Adam and Eve sinned, how thankful we are that what? That it's there. And who did win? God won. God raised Christ from the dead. Without that, where are we? And one little baby was all that kept that promise going at one point in time. But that's why I didn't win. That's why I did not win. So because of that, we have redemption. Because of that thread that came on through. And Messiah came through the lineage of David just like God said he would. All right, comments, buddy? Mike's always got a comment. So. Hell yeah. I just got it. Mike, take 2 points. Not only did the promise here come down to this thread, go back to Abraham offering Isaac. Isaac, Abraham had been told through this son, through Isaac, your seed will be blessed. And yet, go kill it. Right? I think it will happen. Well, don't worry about it. And Abraham did. Abraham says, we will come back to you. Abraham knew God would take care of his promise. The second point Mike makes is really something we need to think about. This baby, Joash, did he save himself from Athaliah? He didn't do it. He didn't know where to do it. Who did? Who stepped up? Jonadab and Jehoshaphat. The priest and his wife. What if they hadn't done that? It would happen. I have no doubt. Okay. But it was their opportunity. It was their, Mike's point is, it was their opportunity to step in. It was their opportunity to step in and be God's agents to get something done. And we will have that same challenge for us. But we're still here to do God's work. Step in and do what our part is. Very bad point. Yeah, that's just going to run into later on. This is the time that you come to the kingdom. And you can basically make it, you sit here and think through all the different ones that have come through history like that, where people have stepped up and taken their part. But yeah, this is a couple. This couple did their thing. Not gonna happen. Yep. Okay. Anything else this morning? Anybody? Oh yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yep. Done that one little thing. Yep. Great. And there's lots of them. Just go through different times. Stepped up. Challenge for us. Step up, do our part. All right. We got about 3 minutes. Thank you.